Welcome back to our final segment of the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Mitchell Glassman, Director of the Division of Resolutions and Receiverships at the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Dennis Kayser. Mitchell, given the interconnected and interdependent nature of the financial systems as we've discussed, could you tell us about the kinds of partnerships you're developing to improve operations or outcomes to sustain the system, and how might these partnerships change over time?
Well, partnership is very important. Not only do we form partnerships with the other regulatory communities, but also with the banks themselves. You know, we need to stay in tune with what the banks are doing and how they're operating. I would say that we actually have partnerships with the consumers themselves, you know, reaching out and listening to what's on their minds and some of their issues. With local, state, and federal governments are also part of our partnerships. And then in particular, with major companies and contractors who have inside knowledge and expertise that we may not have, we call them partners. Anything that helps us do our jobs and to do it better, we will enter into the partnerships. But also being a partner means also we share and we also provide insight. So we kind of feel that this is a good way of doing business. It's one that keeps us abreast of the issues, but also gets us prepared that if we need to change the way our thinking or the way we operate, or possibly to help mitigate risk, this is a good way for us to practice what we do. And partnership, I think, is a good business practice.
So it sounds like you also try to operate as open a system as you can.
I firmly believe that that's the way we need to operate. You know, that's one thing I think that FDIC prides is that we have the ability to reach out and touch, but we also want people to reach out and touch us. We have a very active call center. You know, our website is something that people can derive a lot of information on, whether it's about their FDIC insurance, whether they, you know, through a program we call EDI, if they want knowledge about how can I better educate myself, my kids, or myself through adult literacy? We have this Money Smart program that you can download and look at. We actually have our FDIC employees go out and actually teach it. Then also the fact is that we're going to let people know who we are. You know, we're going to have our 75-year celebration where we're going to go out into the communities and let people know just how important their FDIC insurance is. But in particular, what the role of banking has in our economy and why they should look to their banks as a place to, you know, conduct their financial affairs.
It's perfect timing for that.
Mitchell, you've mentioned, you know, the internet and some of the things that you have on there a couple of times now. I believe a Brown University research study released in 2007 ranked the FDIC's website eighth in the federal government, which is just great. Can you tell us a little bit more about how maybe your division actually uses that website or the internet in an actual bank closing?
Yes, we use it for multiple purposes. You know, one, not only to provide information to all of our constituencies to who may have to deal with us. We may have buyers that come looking for real estate or looking for information on how they would be able to connect with us. We also, after every receivership, after bank failures, we post everything that we know about that transaction, but also what is going on in that receivership. So if you are a creditor, you would have the information readily available to you. One of the things we practice is that if we can answer as many of people's concerns or questions or provide documents that can save them from having to call us or to write a letter, then we want to do it. So we're always constantly keeping it updated. We're constantly always looking for different kinds of technology to be able to help the customer. But the use of the internet, I think, is probably one of the best vehicles for communicating with the public. But also that as things change, we can also make sure that information gets there very quickly so that the customer themselves would be able to react to it quickly.
Speaking of change, I'd like to transition now to talking about the future. You know, as financial institutions grow in both size and complexity, the FDIC is likely to face, you know, some challenges if one or more might fail simultaneously. Can you give us a sense of maybe some of the key issues that will affect the FDIC and in particular your division maybe over the next few years and how you envision your office might need to evolve in light of these challenges?
It is always something that we constantly keep on our radar. You know, you're correct. The institutions are getting large. They're always merging. They're acquiring. Even at the community bank level, there's a lot of changes. One thing we try to do is look ahead. where is the industry going, and whether or not our current processes and procedures really match up to what we're going to be doing. I'll give you a case in point. You know, when we come into a large institution or any institution, they now have the ability of customers to pay bills online. That's very important. So when we come into an institution, we might want to make sure we maintain that type of relationship. We also are very interested in making sure we maintain the core value of the franchise, whether it's the core deposits, the type of loans, the type of technology platforms. As banks become much larger, they also get involved in capital markets type approaches. Where they get their funding becomes a little bit more diverse. So our ability to understand how the banks operate and how they are dealing with their customers, because what we're trying to do is capture that value and actually, through a merger acquisition process, be able to move it to a new institution so that the same continuity of services that the customers expect will just flow to the new customer. So in a way, we have to be prepared to move quickly to understand what's on the balance sheet of the bank, but how does it relate to the FDIC in a least cost manner, but also ultimately to the consumer. And in order to do that, you always have to look ahead. You always have to see what's out there. You have to kind of figure out, A, how am I going to deal with this particular situation? Example is a lot of the institutions are now getting involved in what they call reverse mortgages. Well, that is something that's very important to the consumer, and we're, you know, working very hard to say, what if we were to receive a portfolio like this, how would we react? Or if there's multiple platforms that the bank is working on, for instance, they may have offshore platforms, how would we handle that? What if certain things weren't to happen? How would we deal with it? So the banks become large. They also become complex. And we try to foreshadow what we need to do and be certain that we're operating in a way that gets us the best results, the least cost result.
So this is actually a very critical point here. So it's really more than just insuring the deposits. It's also about preserving the services that that institution was providing within that community so that the consumers, to a certain extent, will see sort of a seamless transition should one of these events take place.
That is very critical for us. But I would also tell you that I'm in the business of selling banks. And if I can obtain a premium for that franchise value, that is in the best interest, not only the FDIC, but all the creditors that may be involved. So by understanding the nature of the bank, its customer base, how it was operating, allows me to be able to transfer that value, and hopefully through an auction process, through a bidding process, we're able to get more value from it and actually receive more dollars for the benefit of everybody. That's one thing that we do have is we have $52 billion in our insurance fund, and it's not taxpayer-driven. Our funds come from the industry, so we have a very strong desire to be certain that we try to minimize the cost not only to the consumers, but ultimately to protect our taxpayers.
That's great. We talk a lot to our guests about the pending government retirement wave, which is a big issue for many organizations here in the federal government. How are you handling this issue within your organization, and what are you doing to ensure that you have the right staff mix to meet any of these future challenges?
That is something that we at the FDIC are also facing. We have this bell curve where we've got a lot of new folks that we're bringing in. We've got a lot of people who have the ability to leave under voluntary retirement, and there's like a big bubble right in the middle. So we've got different strategies. As we discussed earlier, we have our corporate employee program where a lot of the newer folks are coming in, getting a cross, you know, understanding of the organization. But we also have brought back what I consider mid-career hire employees, people who have experience to be able to fill the gap, who are in their careers, are able to join us. We've brought back retirees in certain cases to help, you know, meet the bubble. And last but not least, we're always looking that if indeed we lose certain knowledge, certain key people, who would be in our succession? So we've developed a program through our corporate university where we identify who are high potentials. We've got a very aggressive leadership program. And I might want to add that I'm also dean of the College of Leadership Development, so I'm very much into what we're doing organizationally, you know, to provide succession. But what really counts is that it's the knowledge that the folks retained, and you'd be able to pass it on so that the next generation not only has the ability to provide management and leadership, but also has the technical skill sets to do it successfully.
So let's talk about this future generation. As you reflect on your 35 years of experience in the industry and in public service, what advice might you perhaps give a person who's out there considering a career in the public sector?
Well, I would tell you, it wasn't my plan to stay in the public sector more than 5 years. But I have to tell you, when you're in the role of helping people, making a difference, and being part of something bigger than you are, it's very easy to catch some passion for it. And I do have a passion for what I do because I have been in West Kansas and parts of Iowa and parts of Texas where I met people who depended upon the FDIC, depended upon their government to step up and do the right thing. And I think that gives you a certain amount of satisfaction. So I would encourage anybody who is seeking a career in the federal sector, in the federal space, that it is a good career. It is something they can get a lot of satisfaction. And whether they stay 1 year or they stay like me 35 years, they're going to gain. It's going to be value added to not only to their own career, but I would also tell something that in a lot of families, they'll take pride in the fact that they're out helping the public in a service that's desperately needed.
That's a great perspective. Thank you. Unfortunately, we have come to the end of our time, so I want to thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule. But more importantly, Dennis and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to our country across the various roles that you've held at the FDIC.
Well, I'd like to thank for being invited and sharing. One thing, the FDIC is going to be here for 75 years. It's going to be here for a long time. But I think there's one thing that's consistent that, that we will always strive to do the best we can and, frankly, take a leadership role in all of federal service. And again, we thank you for inviting us to share.
Great. Thank you. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Mitchell Glassman, Director of the Division of Resolutions and Receiverships at the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. My co-host has been Dennis Kayser, partner in IBM's Federal Civilian Practice. As you enjoy the rest of your day, please take time to remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who may not be able to hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but who deserve our unconditional respect and support. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.